we say a big hello to our friend Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Hi there, Chad.
Hey, Rich. How's it going?
We're having a pretty good Monday so far. Now, we'll talk Celtics and Red Sox and all of that fairly unimportant stuff, but the big thing comes first. How do you feel today being the father of a high school graduate?
Yeah, my daughter graduated from Wells High yesterday. Good. You know what's going to be hard is when she actually goes to college. Like, nothing really changed today. You know?
Right, right.
She rolled in at like 6 a.m. from Project Garrett graduation, but, you know, still the same job and friends hanging around, all that. But when they go to school, I'll probably be a blubbering mess to prepare yourself if it's on a Monday.
Ooh, is she leaving the state?
What's that?
Is she leaving the state for college?
No, she's going to University of New England, hopefully playing lacrosse there. And one of her really close friends is going to play basketball there. So won't be totally unfamiliar.
Oh, good. And close enough that you can see her. It's not like she's several zip codes away.
No. She will come home to see her cats and ignore her parents, which is kind of how things go now.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's see. Let's begin with the NBA Finals last night. You wrote a terrific piece today at Boston.com. I think anybody who's followed this Celtics journey could not possibly have been surprised by last night, because nothing comes easy for this bunch.
Yeah, I didn't have Malik Fitz outscoring Al Horford, Marcus Smart, and Rob Williams, but Cornette tying Horford in points, I figured. I think we all assumed that would happen. But no, it's just they make things hard on themselves and then tend to recover from it. The big question is whether after going out and having a stinker of a game after the first quarter yesterday, whether they bounce back strong Wednesday in the first game at home. We saw them lose game 6 in the Eastern Conference Finals and then go down to Miami and win. We saw them come back from 3-2 down against the Bucks. They've handled every test, even with some roadblocks that they've put up themselves. It slowed themselves down a little bit. And that's what last night felt like. That game was there for the taking. You don't look at certainly not in the second half after the Warriors blew them off the court in the third quarter, but you could watch the first part of that game and say they're in this and they're leaving points on the court right now. They're turning the ball over, taking bad shots, that sort of thing. But they had come out a little bit more focused and, of course, played a little bit better after the break, a lot better after the break. They could have gotten out of there 2-0. It was almost like they were content, getting the split.
I like there were several references in your piece today, whether it was Joe Barry Carroll, Terry Durod. My goodness, you sprinkled some of the classics in there.
Yeah, you know what? I have to file immediately after the game now, so I'm just writing what I feel like saying. I'm really thinking about it too much. I've got like 10 minutes after the game ends to get my column in because of print deadlines, of all things. So, I had my assignment, which was to write about what a debacle that was and then kind of pivot and look ahead a little bit. When you start seeing guys come in with 10 minutes, 45 seconds left in the game, and he basically saying, yep, we're going to rest. This one's over.
Now, is Draymond Green one of those guys that you would love him if he were on your team? Oh, do we lose Chad? Uh-oh. All right, let's see.
About the outcome.
Oh, we go. I thought we lost you there for a second, Chad. Well, I'd asked about Draymond Green. I don't know if you heard that.
Oh, yeah. I think officials on the TV broadcast are pretty much useless as it is. But we actually got something valuable last night out of it with Steve Jabby on the ESPN broadcast, where he basically admitted that if a guy has a technical foul on him, they're a little bit hesitant to throw him out of the game to call that second technical. And Draymond plays that to his advantage. He went out and got that first technical and then wreaked havoc, knowing that he wasn't going to get thrown out of the game by Zach Zarba or Tony Brothers. Is just an atrocious official. Every time you see him working a Celtics game, you know it's going to be a debacle. And they essentially admitted that they don't want to throw guys out. So kind of got free rein after that first technical to be a lead blocker for Steph Curry and to do some dirty stuff. And it had a real impact on the game. And I think you have to give Draymond credit for knowing what he can get away with. I think it's going to be a little different in Game 3 in Boston. And he probably is aware of that, too. But he was other than Curry, he was the most impactful guy in the game last night.
And you're right with the officiating. And does it favor one team or another? I don't know over the course of a long series, but it's consistently bad and has been throughout certainly all the postseason.
Yeah, you know, everybody gives Scott Foster a lot of grief. You know, he's known as the extender because if a team's down 2-1 in a series, he's got a reputation for making sure it gets to 2-2 or whatever. And, you know, he was the guy Tim Donaghy was calling all the time, so there's certainly some suspicion about him, but I think he's far from the worst official. He tends to just let guys play, and the two guys last night, Zarba and Brothers, are two of the worst I've seen. Zarba is a guy who he has this habit of blowing the whistle after the play is completed, so almost like he's waiting to see if the shot goes in before he makes the call, and that happened a couple of times last night. And Brothers is just bad. He had a really bad history with the Celtics when Doc Rivers was the coach, and still kind of seems to continue to this day. So if we see Scott Foster, the extender, out there again, I don't think that's actually a terrible thing.
I'm just curious to see how many new ways Mark Jackson can pronounce Al Horford's name come Game 3.
You know, Mark Jackson's grown on me a little bit. I used to think he was terrible, but I found myself siding with him when he starts bickering with Van Gundy. And the officials thing was one of those things.
Yes, yeah. Van Gundy thought it was fine.
Yeah, he said he started last night by saying, yeah, you know, you kind of do have to officiate, and talked in circles so long that he came back to this point of, yeah, you really can't officiate differently when a guy is the technical. And I think Jackson won that argument. They miss Mike Breen on those broadcasts. I don't want to hear him out saying, you know, bang every time Jordan Poole throws one in from 40 feet or Curry pulls up for a 30-footer. But he tends to keep those two reined in a little bit better than Mark Jackson. Mark Jones has been able to as he's filled in for Breen.
Yeah, now, is Breen back for Game 3? Do we know?
Supposed to be. He had a hard time passing protocols. Remember, he missed Game 7,
right?
Eastern Conference Finals after contracting COVID, and Van Gundy sounded terrible that night. Then Van Gundy missed the next game, but he was back sooner than Breen has been. So ESPN spokesperson said last night they expect him back for Game 3. So hopefully that's the case. He's such a great big game voice.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. Well, the Red Sox, it only took them a third of the season, but here they are at 500, and at least for a few hours, in possession of the seventh or eighth wild card or whatever it is that it takes to make the playoffs in Major League Baseball now.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, they've been, I guess, mediocre, right?
Very.
500 baseball. Bounced back pretty well here. You know, Franchi Cordero's giving him some stuff. Nick Pivetta's been just outstanding in his last five starts. They've had things go right lately that weren't going right early in the season. But when you're at 500 and you're right there in the wild card hunt, that's a pretty convincing case that there are too many teams that are going to start getting into the playoffs here. And I know part of it is, you know, they get the Angels here now, and the Angels just complete collapse from being the number one wild card for a pretty good chunk of the start of the season. You know, Houston being in the first place in the division, but the Angels got off to a great start. Now, what have they lost? 11 in a row with Ohtani and Trout, and Ohtani's really been struggling lately. So, you know, good opportunity, I guess, for the Red Sox to gain some ground in that wild card race. But feels a little flimsy that they're already sort of in that picture.
Yeah, and of course, the downside of it is with more teams thinking they have a shot at postseason, it's going to be tougher and tougher to find teams who have given up enough to be willing to make a trade, especially teams that might want to part with somebody who could help the Red Sox awful bullpen.
Yeah, and you know, you could use about three guys there, right? I mean, the Matt Barnes thing is just, he fell off a cliff as soon as they gave him an extension. It's just such incredibly bad timing, and he was so good in the first half last year. And they just haven't come close to replacing that. I really like Garrett Whitlock in that role of giving them a couple of innings every couple of days and in the high leverage situations, being the guy who comes in to get the heart of the order hitters out. I know he's going to be a starting pitcher down the road. They think he can be a really good one, but I'd rather see him saving that bullpen right now than doing anything else. And Cora was talking yesterday about how he's going to start using Tanner Houck in shorter bursts rather than two innings every couple of days or three innings every 3 days or however it was. It's going to be an inning here and maybe being able to use him again for an inning the next day. So they probably have some data that you know, he's much more effective in those shorter bursts, but he's another guy who I'd like to see have an expanded role in that bullpen. Just electrifying stuff sometimes, but they are going to need outside help there. They've got a couple of really promising young pitchers in the minor leagues, but they're starters right now, and you just don't know what they would give you at the major league level if they called them up to help in the bullpen, Brian Bayo being number one. So going to have to make a trade or two here or there to bolster that really the biggest weakness on the team.
And if and when Chris Sale comes back and is able to go out there and make a start every fifth day, would they consider moving Whitlock back to the bullpen then?
I've had people tell me they ought to make Sale a closer since the 2018 World Series. But so, I don't know. Maybe that's the path for him going forward if he can't have the durability to be a starting pitcher. But I tend to think he's still going to be the guy in the rotation, at least at this point in the career. And, you know, what's he got, 11 wins since he signed his extension? You just don't know what you're going to get from him, but you cross your fingers and hope he can resemble the guy who was one of the, if not the premier pitcher in the American League for the better part of seven seasons, to at least begin looking somewhat like that guy again.
Fingers crossed on that one. We'll see. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe with us. Chad, thanks as always. We appreciate it, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Are you the Draymond Green of pickup basketball up there? Is that who you are?
You know, I might have been back in the day. Yeah, yeah. Although I feel like Draymond would be one of those guys in the pickup games that is always calling fouls on somebody else, which is like the cardinal rule in pickup. And, you know, unless there's blood, you don't call a foul.
Yeah, I think he's very distorted from what's a foul on him and what's a foul on everybody else. That seems to be the case.
I'd be that guy, you know, they called the Bermuda Triangle, that if you pass the ball to him, you never see it again.
That's the good guy to be. He is the most fun.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Chad, thanks. We'll talk soon.
See you, Rich.
It's Chad Finn of the Boston Globe here on Downtown.